All right, it's Wednesday. We're back. I think it's episode 56.
56, yeah.
56?
That sounds correct.
Okay, so I said to you before we went live, I have two stories. So here's the first one.
All right.
You know me and my challenges with episodes numbers, right? I can never remember.
Of course.
Yeah, it's just Wednesday. It's more than episode one. It's less than episode 500. So... right before the show, it's about 5 minutes, I was well prepared because we missed a week, right? So we are sharing maybe in the AI space news that is, it's like ancient at this point this week. But anyways, I think it's still good stuff. So I went back and I went to pull up my notes and I'm like, it's episode 56. So I go into Obsidian, I pull the note, I start searching for the notes. There are no notes for episode 56. And I'm like, are you shitting me? I'm sure I did this, right? So then I'm like, I keep looking. I'm like, wait, this was created last week and it says 55. I'm like, I'm sure that's what it is. So I hope I'm not regurgitating stories. I don't believe that I am, but we'll see. We'll see.
55, 56. That sounds about right. You know, man. Either way. Either way sounds just about correct.
Close enough, right? Close enough. I have a real life story about our intro song, which...
Oh, MCP related?
Yeah, MCP related. So okay. I was in a meeting today, and...
At 9 or 10?
It was... I don't know what time. It was an afternoon meeting. And I actually thought of a new drinking game, even though I really don't drink anymore. Like, I remember the old ones, like, I think, like, there was, like, a Smurf one, like, every time somebody said Smurf, you had to drink or whatever, and then your buddies were, like, lying on the floor. Anytime somebody says MCP or AI or API, you have to drink. You'd be hammered in, like, 3 minutes.
You would. Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Any new project launch or product meeting, totally.
Yeah, I feel that. Don't get me wrong. It was a really constructive meeting. I'm getting to work on lots of fun and interesting stuff. But I chuckled a couple times in the meeting. I'm like, how many times can we say MCP in a row before it just sounds weird?
It loses all meaning.
Yeah. The answer is quite a few. All right. We are a week late because... last week, I don't know about you, but like August for me, it seems like crazy. I can't believe I know we're not the end of August. There's like a week and change to go, but I don't know where the heck this month went. And last week I was exhausted by like Wednesday afternoon. I'm just like, I got to go and lie down, man, and just think about some other shit for a while. So, yeah.
That's
I don't know
totally
how your
fair.
August is going.
It's flying. It's flying. Yeah. I don't know why. Maybe it's people are on vacation, so there's more work to do, but
maybe.
I don't know what it is.
Yeah, I don't know
it's
either.
It's totally zooming by.
Yeah. Have you heard a CNE commercial yet?
Not yet, but we're making plans to go.
Are you? Okay. Sure. You're getting ahead, yeah. I haven't heard one yet, and I was thinking about it this morning. I kind of was surprised. This late into August, and there's no CNE commercial?
2 weeks, right?
Yeah, just 2 weeks. You're actually going to the CNE.
Yeah, we'll go one day for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, we used to. I don't know. Kind of, you know, the thing, like, I find that once you fall out of the habit of doing it, you're kind of like, do I really want to do it anymore? I don't know if I do. although the food building is worth the trip alone, right?
That's the main thing. Yeah. Play some carnival games. I mean, we don't get up that much anyways. So it's nice to go to,
you know,
a big
I probably should go in all honesty, because I don't get out a lot either. Maybe I should go. Okay. Let's see here. Where do we want to start? AWS news for the week and a half. The first thing I have on my list here is that you can now, we talked about this, I don't know, maybe a month ago? I don't know. In the past. It's kind of like an episode idea. I have no idea. Remember we talked about the idea of using IAM principles and associating those principles. You can use like an IAM user or an IAM role with Bedrock as part of your cost allocation.
It
now also supports, and I had to look up what the heck this is, Bedrock Mantle. I was like, is this a new Mantle service? Like, what is Bedrock Mantle?
Yeah, I've never heard of that.
Yeah, you know, it's funny that you say that because I think we may have talked about this once very briefly, and I think we both went, yeah, that's cool, and moved on. And then I was like, oh man, what is Mantle? So I went and I looked, and essentially Mantle is native drop-in compatibility with OpenAI's APIs. That's all it is.
So that's like specifically their agent tools or whatever services they're offering on their system.
Yeah, you can talk to them directly, same API calls and everything that you're used to. If you're talking to OpenAI directly, you can do that through Mantle. So Mantle now also supports this idea of cost allocation through Bedrock. And I can tell you that has been very helpful for me. Not the Mantle piece, but just the cost
the
allocation.
Yeah.
So I've gone through and tagged. Tag isn't the right word. I have a bunch of Lambda functions, right?
Okay.
Those Lambda functions all have individual principles, roles. Okay.
Sure.
And then what I've done is in the cost allocation, just like any other cost allocation thing, you've got a feature. So I'm screwing this story up.
Just like associating identities to...
It's still a tag. So what I have is I have a feature tag, right?
Yeah.
For all of those Lambda functions. One is doing classification. One is the synthesizer, yada, yada, yada. And then what I do is based off of the roles, I can then pull in those feature tags. Essentially, I'm saying, hey, go and find these principles and then pull this feature, this tag, which in my case is called feature. And now I can go into Cost Explorer and say, okay, show me my Bedrock costs. Sure, here are the different models, but I want to know the cost, in my case, by feature.
Yeah.
And actually, it's really handy. I haven't used it to kind of save money. Like, is there a way I could improve whatever this is doing? But I think it is handy to actually look, if you're building an AI-based solution using Bedrock, it is a nice feature to kind of understand, better understand, like, okay, cost by model, that's great, but then cost by principle too. Right?
Like, yeah, like
a person
you want to know
or
your
app or something.
Oh yeah, totally. Like the applications for having your team's usage go through Bedrock makes total sense there.
Yeah.
But it also makes sense for kind of modeling out or accounting for how much spend you're doing on various parts of your AI application. So yeah, that's pretty good. Useful info.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty cool. And you know what? I went and I tagged everything and I did. Remember I was saying that I had a problem with my synthesizer? Where it, when I first put it in, it kept, I can't remember what it was now. We talked about it on the show one time where it was not a loop, but it wasn't finishing in time. And
it was timing out. It was a timeout issue.
It was a timeout issue and it just kept trying over and over, right?
Yeah.
So using this idea of cost allocation tags in Bedrock, I was able to see that, I went and I fixed it, right? I think I can still improve it, but obviously it's the largest part of my brain or memory solution. It went from $71 in June to $16 in July.
Okay. So that's a lot of waste you cut out of that process. Error catching is so important now with these things, right? Like you never know, especially if you're... A retry loop could get really expensive.
and it's, you know what, we've talked about it on the show a lot of times, and obviously I wasn't following my own advice here, but like the idea of budgets wouldn't have helped me here, because still honestly, like, am I going to look for $100 spending in that account? Probably not.
What your spend is.
Yeah, but I was thinking more along the other thing we've talked about is cost anomaly. Because it would have been like, wait, you spent $10 on this, and now you're spending $70. What?
Yeah, something's not right here.
You would even see the fluctuation on the day, right? Because you would see you know, day one, it was $10. I'm making silly numbers up. Day two, it was $30. So anomaly detector would have seen that, and I would have learned a lot faster versus how I learned the problem by just happening to go into the Cost Explorer. So good lesson, right? These things can cost you a lot of money. You got to be careful.
Yeah, preventative monitoring is pretty handy to have. Yeah, track your handy errors. Yeah.
You got it. Okay, what is the other thing that I had here? Staying on the theme of OpenAI, you can now also get Daybreak, OpenAI Daybreak models on AWS.
Daybreak is their Project Glasswing equivalent, right? That's their CyberSec thing?
Yes, you got it. Yeah, okay. You stumped me with Glasswing. I had to think about that one for a second. But yeah, it's essentially their frontier AI cyber security type models. And it sounds like there's three, I don't know if I want to call it a model, but sort of, I guess it's very similar to, you know, how we have Sol, Terra, and Luna.
Sol, Terra, Luna.
Yeah, yep. It's kind of the same thing. They've got blue for defensive workflows. They've got red for exploits, pen testing, vulnerability, blah, blah, blah. And then they have something called Codex Security. And I tried to unravel that a little bit, and the only thing I wrote down was agentic scaffolding. At the time, when I wrote that note, it probably would have jogged a memory.
It made a ton of sense, yeah.
But now it just sounds like a fancy phrase. I'm like, ooh, agentic scaffolding. I need that. I got to have
that's
that.
That's good.
Right? Yeah.
That's good. Put in your harness. And,
yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you're all set, man. You don't have to worry about anything. Obviously, it's just like Mythos and some other things. Just because it's there doesn't mean you get access to it. I guess it's a very small group of controlled people.
Invite
but
only.
Yeah, if you're one of those folks and you're on AWS, you can now get access to it directly in Bedrock.
Got it.
Yeah.
I wonder if it's the same thing as Mythos versus Fable, which was essentially just they changed the guardrails for the use cases, right? I imagine it's probably something similar, but
yeah.
Anyways, we won't ever be able to use it, so
no,
at least not for the next month.
yeah, until they come out with the next thing, right? And then these ones are just like, oh man, been there, done that. These are just regular stuff now. You can all use that stuff. I like the I think I used this analogy a long time ago. I like the air show analogy. Like the moment you see a stealth fighter at your local air show, that probably means they have something way better because they're not flying that stealth bomber in your local air show because
that thing is
it's so old at that
15
point.
Out of date.
Oh yeah. All right. Did you happen to have any other AWS news? I think I shared or you shared something.
Nothing's coming to mind. I wasn't super excited about AWS news this week. Nothing crazy. There was some quality of life improvements for Identity Center and IAM access and like service roles.
Yep.
So those are easier to spin up now. They can spin up by default for like Lambda roles, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But nothing crazy.
Yeah. I don't, you know what? I hate to admit this because I generally look at the AWS news thing every day. But this week has been such a blur that you're lucky I'm actually here. If my Echo hadn't have like chimed in and said, hey, you got somewhere to be, I might have been like, I say sitting on the couch, but probably talking to Claude about a problem or something. It's just like everything's just melded together at this point. All right.
Grok 4.6 is on Bedrock, so that's exciting.
Grok 4.6 is on Bedrock. I can't. It's top secret, man. Top secret. I started using some video generation stuff on Bedrock just today.
Oh, really?
POC. Yeah. You know what I found funny though? I was like, I can do video generation. Nova Reel, Nova Canvas. They're all deprecated.
Wow. Okay.
End of life. End of life as of like September 30th.
Interesting. So Amazon's kind of deprecating all their Nova models, I guess.
Isn't there like one called Sonic as well? Like a speech one? I wonder what's going to happen to that. It was one of the ones that I wanted to try and then never really had a practical reason to try it. So I was like, hey, this speech thing would be cool, and then never did anything.
Yeah, no, it's I guess they're just, I mean, they're not bothering to keep up in the race is what it seems like.
Yeah, I think they're going to be the provider.
Yeah. Right. Especially with the quality of open weight models that are coming out, like you can just host whatever DeepSeek or JLM, which we'll get to later. But
yeah, perfect. Well, if that's all the AWS news we want to talk about, let's shift to my favorite part of the show: personal project. Do you have any personal project updates?
So I'm finally free from the Pokemon TCG tournament project.
Yeah,
Where'd
you end up?
So I ended up like 1,000th place or something.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Not too bad out of like 6 or 7K people. So
that's awesome.
Top quartile.
Yeah.
I peaked at like second place at one
point. I remember we were talking about this. It was like a couple. that's pretty cool.
But it was a really fun activity. And if you're at all into data science projects or AI ML or any of that, I highly recommend just fooling around on Kaggle.
Yeah.
So that was good. But I've used what I'm learning on that project to kind of set up like a league running system for agents to play games in, like an arena type thing.
Nice.
So I'm gonna have that infra available for the next Kaggle thing that I find.
Perfect.
And I'll snowball into that. So
very cool.
You
can leverage it in the next tournament.
Yeah, exactly. That's the plan anyways. So I'll do that for the next Kaggle thing. And then I've been kind of messing around with my remote agent kind of control center system.
Yeah.
So I'm still hammering away on, I've got that central kind of server that I connect to, and that goes out, and I've got various kind of avenues for sub agents to spin up and work on things, right? So I can spin up, I'm playing around with Lambda functions for tasks. I'm playing around with using ECS tasks that spin up temporarily and that kind of thing. So still developing that.
Yeah.
And then what else? There was I don't know if you've noticed this. Have you noticed that Opus 5 writes in a really annoying way?
Oh my God.
it's very painful.
Yeah, I don't know, man. Like, it's still really smart. Like, I use it. It's my primary model. But there are have been multiple times over the last, like, I don't know how long has Opus 5 been out for? It's more than a month now, right? Month?
Is it a month? You know, timescales are so bizarre with this stuff.
They don't really exist.
There's been a new model a day almost since we've missed an episode, right? Like
yeah,
in between, there's been like 7 releases.
Yeah, it's crazy. I don't know. I'm often finding myself, and you know, the funny thing is, you know, the old saying, the old imposter syndrome thing.
Yeah, yeah.
This model spits out so much shit. I'm reading it and I'm like, I don't think I understand what this thing is even saying. Like, I don't get it. Right. So then I'm like, okay, dude, point form, concise, just tell me, like, just in one or two sentences, tell me what you just told me in 48 paragraphs. Like, I've said this to you before. I try really hard to read it because I think that's one of the big problems with these tools is if you just sit there and YOLO it, like, yep, you're just kind of saying go, you end up with a bit of a mess. And I know we've talked a lot about this idea. I get hung up on it a lot, those levels of AI, right? And I'm trying to work up around 5 as best I can. But I still find, like, I'm really a product manager at this point.
Yeah.
And if I'm not careful, that thing can go off the rails fast. And I think there was this sweet spot between, like, you know, when it really clicked in my head in the early part of the year after reading that article, right, about the levels kind of at the early part of the year versus now, there was some sort of sweet spot in there where I kind of thought level 5 was real. That you could do it. I don't think you can do it with Opus 5.
I don't think 5 is feasible, and it's for the reasons like you mentioned, right? Like the quality is not there. The discernment is not there. You need to have some sort of direction that you're going in, some sort of vision for the project or whatever you're working on.
Yeah.
You need to have standards in place. Like, the way these things work is you have like this big blob of stats, statistics, essentially, that's regurgitating out text that's fine-tuned for what you're doing right now based on what you fed it. But you need to have a lot, all the infrastructure in place around that, and you need to steer it to get anything useful out of it, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think five might be a pipe dream for a while. I don't.
Yeah.
At least right now.
Yeah, I'm kind of waiting for the next one. There's nothing wrong with it. Like, it does a good job. Like I said, it's still my primary tool. It cranks out good code. I can get things that I need done and working well. But one of the things that I did do was in my global Claude config, I have a little chunk in there that says, whenever you respond, I want a summary at the end in bullet point form, one sentence each, for the highlights of the text that you've provided me. I still try really hard to read everything, but like, when I'm sitting here and just watching the screen scroll and scroll and scroll, I'm like, dude, I asked you like to give me one bit of information about like an issue that we've opened in Git or whatever, and it's like 47 pages long. It shouldn't be 47 pages long.
And those are the tokens you see, right? Those are like the final tokens that it spit out at you. You don't see the reasoning tokens anymore.
Yeah. You know, it's funny that you say that. Sorry to cut you off. You just made me think of another thing. The other day, I asked it to give me some information. And I'm pretty sure I was very clear. Like, I want it in a table form. Just show me a simple table. And it's like, you can see it doing things. And then it's like, here's my evaluation. And I'm like, that's not what I asked you to do. I asked you to show it to me in a table form. I'm like, where's the table? There isn't even a table. So I go back and I'm like, where's the table? And it's like, oh yeah, oops, sorry. Here's the table. I'm like, thank you. This is the thing that I've noticed about this. Like, you can't let this thing go unsupervised anymore. And I would say, like, earlier opuses, I think I felt more comfortable letting it do its own thing on a lot more long running stuff. And now I'm less comfortable doing that.
Is that because the ceiling is higher now than it was? Like, it's able to do more, or it's just like the information stream is harder to parse, like what's actually happening, or what do you think is doing that?
Well, even today I've caught it a couple times. Like, it's taking action I didn't tell it to take, right? Like,
okay.
I want to discuss this note from a meeting because I want to make sure we have a concise plan on how to deliver this for the customer. And then I'm watching it go by and it's creating issues in Git. And I'm like, escape, why are you creating issues? Like, that's not what I asked you. And I don't know if that's answering your question or not, but it seems like it's more willing
to act,
to just take action. And I don't want you to do that at this point, right? Like, the way I've worked with this tool, it's August. I think I really started using this thing hardcore in like, oh man, probably the beginning of the year, right? I think when both January, you and I sort of really started. So what are we talking, 8 months? Like, for 8 months, that's being generous. For a lot of those months, I've kind of got a little bit of a workflow, right? If it's items for humans, it goes in Kanban. If it's an item for you, i.e. you're going to do the code, it goes in GitLab. And then I review those issues, and then we work on the issues. I have my little Go skill, and once I'm happy with the issues, the Go skill goes and does it work. It does the work. And I've noticed just in the last week that I ask it to kind of lay out the plan, and it just starts writing code. And I'm like, hang on. Like, that, I didn't ask you to do that. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
This is like the RL4 Claude Code and agentic stuff, like for distributed agent workloads coming up, I think. I think that's what's happening here. Like, you have all this work going into this thing to make it good at controlling and running multiple tasks in parallel and writing a bunch of code. That's what they're training it on. So that's why you're seeing what you're going to get.
Yeah, maybe.
Probably the same reason you're seeing these cyber incidents, right? Like, you're RLing on cracking this system. Like, okay, I'm just going to go and hack this thing and get the answer, right?
Yeah.
I've noticed the same thing. I've noticed it's like just more and more willing to do stuff and more verbose. So the way it, the way I'm resolving that is with skills and with model selection, like for specific tasks. There's like really good skill by Poteto, I think it is, on GitHub. That is it's in a repo called PStack, and it's called Unslop, and it unsloppifies your model's output, right?
Dude, if I see the phrase load bearing or spine or
it's not this, it's that.
Like, I'm like, yeah, it's not this, it's that. I actually have a rule in my global config that says, do not use, it's not this, it's that. Like, it's not X, it's Y. Don't do that. Like, just tell me it's Y. I don't care. And the other one that I just bothers me is like the honest part. Okay, so is all the other stuff that you told me before the honest part just a lie? Like, is that a lie? Why do you have to say this is the honest part? I don't get it. So, yeah, there's a lot of little things I've noticed in this one that just, I don't know.
Like, we're doing technical work. We just need, like, a quick technical readout summary of what's happened, what's going on, what are we working on here, and, you know, that's all I really want.
That's all I really want.
And the only way to... The only way it seems like I could do that is to abuse some of this 1 million context that we're getting now with these things and feed in some skills to try and shape the output regularly. So that's like a system I'm trying to build to get that working right the way I want.
So did I, and this is one of the things that caught my eye on when I was reading my notes, and I'm like, is this from last week? Like, I don't, what the hell's going on? Did I tell you about the new skill that I built based off of a skill I heard Gary Tan talk about? It's called Skillify. Does that ring a bell?
I don't know. I don't think you'd mentioned. Is this the skill for taking a workflow and making it into a skill?
Okay. Yeah. So he has one. I could have downloaded it off Git, right? And just run with it. And there's nothing wrong with that. I kind of enjoy the process of figuring some of these things out, right? Like, I
think you should write your own skills.
Yeah.
I think writing skills is important.
I like the iterative back and forth as much as we were just complaining about the latest model, right? I do enjoy as I'm working on something, the exchanging of ideas, right? Like back and forth. I see this. What do you see? I see that. You know, and you can kind of, I know it's not a person. The back and forth, though, what I find works for me is I'll often be like, wait, I didn't think of that. Or now that we've talked about that, what about this idea? So I really enjoy that. So I took this thing. And I have told you about the retro skill, I think. Essentially, at an end of a session, when we're on the retro and we find all the shit that didn't work very well, right? Skillify is kind of the opposite of that, in the sense that what I want you to do is find the things that worked well that you had to do more than once. Like, it's writing scripts for itself to do stuff. Well, let's not write those scripts. Like, if you do this all the time, let's just turn it into a skill. Write the script once that you can refer to in the skill, and then you can do X the same way every time. And it's actually, I've put a fair number of skills in my library over the last, well, I would have put this in my notes for last week. So it's only been a week and change old. And I've put a fair number of skills, and Claude is deciding what it thinks should be a skill based on what it did in the session. I keep doing this over and over again. That should be a skill. I've really enjoyed seeing how it's going through its context and trying to figure out what it's doing. And then it writes the skill. It puts it in a little staging area for me. And I can go through it. And then once I'm happy with it, you know, change some of the text or whatever. And then I just dump it in my skills repo and it pulls it down. And there we go. So that's been kind of fun. I've been enjoying that. So I guess I'm kind of doing the same thing with you, is trying to corral it a little bit with skills.
Yeah. It's like, there's not much, I mean, what else can you really do, right? Like, you can change, you can either change the model or you can change the context that goes into it or the harness you're using, but the harnesses are all pretty close and comparable anyways, right?
Yeah. So pretty much. Right. I do have a Kiro crew update.
Oh, how was it?
I blew through my 1,000 tokens, right? Remember we talked about that. I blew through my 1,000 tokens in like a day. When I was on,
it
went really fast. So I was on Kiro Pro, $20 a month. You get 1,000 tokens. I blew through that in a day. So I did decide to upgrade it. So I thought, okay, well, it's not really a fair comparison if I'm on a Claude Max plan. and I have a $20 right. plan over here. Okay. So I went to, they have too many plan names and they're all the same. I think I went to a Pro Max plan versus the Pro Max Pro Plus. Premium
Plus Ultra Extra.
Yeah, I don't know. Fixings. It's yeah. $100 a month. You get 5,000 credits. Okay. The other thing that I did, now my logic here was, wait a second, 5,000 credits, if I use
it... Oh, it's just like a straight multiple.
Yeah, it's just... Yeah. Yeah, it's just a straight multiple. Okay. And like if you use Opus, it's like 2.2 yeah. times the credit consumption as like GLM, which is at like 0.5. And Quen is okay. at like 0.25. So right. I thought to myself, if I blew through 1,000 tokens in a day
yeah.
and I stayed on that trajectory, that means I'm going to go through my 5,000 tokens in 5 days.
Right.
That's probably not what I want to do. So I started looking, yep. right? And in Kiro Crew, you can create a crew. Hence the name, I guess, right? So
okay.
essentially is a crew. There's a bunch of crews built for you, but very similar to what I just mentioned, I kind of wanted to sit down and figure out how the hell this thing worked. So I was like, I'm going to build my own crew.
Right.
I need an orchestrator. That orchestrator is going to be Opus 5. I need a coder. That's going to be GLM 5.2 because it's only 0.5. Okay. I thought maybe I would use Quen, but I wasn't that. I really enjoy GLM. I think it's good. So 5.2 yeah. is really good. I'm waiting for 5.3 to be available through their APIs. I don't think they are yet. Mm. I don't know.
Not quite yet.
Not quite. Yeah. yeah. And then I have a researcher, which is Sonnet, and I have a reviewer, which is actually I have two things. I have a code reviewer, which is Opus okay. 5, and then I have what I call a PR reviewer, and remind me to tell you about this in a second. That's Sonnet.
Okay.
And I basically, the thing that I love about this, I'm gonna mess the name up, but it has a feature, I think they call it the issue radar, and you can tie it to okay. GitLab and GitHub. Now GitLab, first off, you can easily tie it to GitLab.com. So if you're hosting okay. in GitLab, easy.
On the cloud.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you're running a self-managed, there's a couple hoops you have to jump through. You basically have to, I'm going to use the word authorize. You basically have to say, yes, Kiro Crew, I know what this self-hosted GitLab is. It's okay for you to connect to it. And then you have to go through some okay. authentication stuff and all that. It reminds me a lot of, was it called Code Connection or something like that? Remember back, this is a feature in AWS a while ago that you could basically tie a GitLab instance or a GitHub instance. I think they called it Code Connect or something like that.
Code Connect, I think.
Yeah.
Sounds familiar.
And you did a little bit of configuration and it was done. It kind of feels exactly the same in this.
Okay.
Once I did that, I pointed it at a project and it pulled in all the issues. And I had already imported all my skills. So my favorite skill okay. is Go. I just typed Go and hit enter. And whoosh, up all bunch of sub-agents start firing away. And I only burnt through 300 tokens. And it closed, well, at least a handful, maybe more issues. And
so like 5 to 10
yeah
sizable yeah. issues. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I've actually good. Really enjoyed it. I'm so used now to just straight CLI all the time that the app is really nice to look at, right? It's an Electron app, I think it's called, right? So it's pretty.
Yeah.
It's got nice GUI and stuff. I am
getting tempted by the GUIs.
Yeah, it's really nice. Yeah. So I've wired it up. It writes to OpenBrain or OrbitBrain, whatever you want to call it. It's talking to that, no problem. I've really enjoyed it. So I think tomorrow I've got another idea. I've got a bit of a growing backlog on a project, still an important project, but not like super important. I don't know why I'm so hung up on that. Like it's using the same models,
tools
yeah. that I would use myself, that I would use on my important projects, but I'm reluctant. I don't know
risk
why.
Risk is risk, right? Like, yeah. there's always a chance, like, it's not deterministic. There's always a chance something can go wrong, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. So I'm easing into it on a couple projects that they're important, but if it went a little sideways, I'll just throw Claude at it, which makes no sense because it's using the same thing. But I'll throw, you know, Claude code at it and it'll fix it. So, I think it's worth a shot, man. I think you should try it. I want your opinion of it just to see what you think.
I'll mess around with it some more and get actual sub going, because the idea, the orchestration piece is the most compelling piece of that for me, is the team of agents that are spec'd out with specific models.
Yeah.
What I would like to have is something open, like something on that can use my open router keys or whatnot. So I'm not sure if that's set up properly, but
yeah, I don't know. I haven't tried
my various API keys.
Yeah, I haven't tried that. I've just been using the drop down built in models that are there that I can just select from and wire them in. But yeah, you're right. You know, like I have a lot of API keys now, which probably actually quite scary if you think about it. when I was building out that little model city simulator thing, you know, I ended up with keys in ZAI and, you know, Kimmy.
Yeah, every service you could.
Every service, I wired it up. Right,
Moonshot.
Yeah. Gemini. So, yeah, it would be actually pretty good to pull those keys in if you could use them. I don't know if that's possible or not.
Yeah. Yeah. Just have to steal their code. It's open source, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I guess, you probably could. You could wrap it yourself. Do you have any other personal project?
Nope. That's pretty much it. Spend the time to go through your workflows and write useful skills for what you're doing. Yeah. And it's probably worth doing that over blindly copying skills you find out there.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I have two more things. I'll keep it really quick, but these are, I think they're interesting little topics. I've talked about my synthesizer. So it runs every night.
Yes.
And sort of pulls all the episodic memories and tries to create a memory, a single memory for a project.
Right.
I've noticed something a little strange lately.
Okay.
When
strange how?
Well, okay, so when I first created this feature, the synthesized memories were okay. They weren't great, but they were okay. And then I was kind of fiddling around, fine-tuning some stuff, and I think they got better. More human readable. Like I could go in and I could look at the Kanban project and I could get a decent project brief on it. What I've noticed though, and I'm not saying like there's something weird going on here, but so I follow that with a but. I have noticed recently that the project briefs are becoming more and more, it feels more agent focused. It's not for human consumption anymore. And by that I mean there was a time, it lasted for about a month, where if I went in, like if I brought you in to work on a project, I could say, Travis, go read the project brief, and you could read it. It was written for a human, and you would know basically what that project was about and kind of where it is. What I've noticed over the last little while is that every night the synthesizer runs and it gathers up new memories. Okay. And what it does is it doesn't get rid of the old synthesized memory. It basically marks that as superseded and creates a new one. It only does that if there are new memories for the project. If there are new memories, it doesn't try to create something new. Okay. But what I've noticed is, like, for example, I saw it today and I was like, what is happening with this thing? It's putting issue numbers in now, like Git issues. Even started, it's decided that OpenBrain is now called OB. Okay, it's short formed.
It's abbreviating.
Yeah, it's abbreviating stuff. And so I go look at it. Okay, if it's an issue number, sure, I could go and look that up if I really wanted. It's not necessarily telling me the status of the project anymore, But the way I look at it is that information would be very helpful for an agent. If I went and said, agent, I want you to go work on this, because now it's got clear references to the issues that are right. deferred or whatever. But it's not very human readable. Okay. And okay. and this OB thing, I'm like, what is OB? Like, what is OB11? I have no idea what that is. So I asked it. I'm like, go look at this brief and I need you to explain to me what OB11 is. And it's like, oh, okay, well, OB is short for open brain. And 11 sure. is a code to an underlying, I can't remember if it was a merge. It's either a merge or an issue. And I'm like, okay, but why are you like why are you using OB11? Yeah, it's basically like, oh, well, that's the same way as earlier referencing just issue 11. And I'm like, well, then why don't you just call it issue 11? Where did OB11 come from? Right? Like, if somebody's looking at that for the first time, they're not going to know what the hell that means. So I've spent some time over the last couple of days trying to unravel as a fancy word, like just trying to turn it back into more human friendly so that if I look at it, I know what it's doing.
You have a real summary. Yeah.
Yeah. Like give me a human readable thing. And if you want to add that at the bottom, by all means, you do it for you. That's fine. But these things are meant for human consumption, not for agents. And I wonder, here's my speculation.
Okay.
I wonder increasingly as I've been using more and more CLI, I'm not really reading those summaries very often. Originally, they were in the Kanban. And even now, I'm talking to my Kanban almost exclusively programmatically.
And through Claude, probably.
Through Claude. So either direct CLI calls, either to store memories or talk to the Kanban board. Generally, it's agents doing that communication for me now. So they're using MCPs.
Yep.
And I almost wonder, pure speculation, right? But I almost wonder if just over time, as I've been using it more and more like that, the agent's like, okay, well, I'll write these memories in a way that would help the agent figure out what the heck to do. It's weird.
Maybe it could also, I mean, there's a couple of things that come to mind, right? Like maybe the system prompt changed for like find some more token efficient ways to do this, mm-hmm. or maybe it's just decayed over time to that state. I'd be curious to know when it first appears in yeah. like the history.
Yeah. I actually wrote myself a little note today. Actually, I had Claude write me a note in Kanban so I could do it before the end of the yeah. week. Basically, because all of the memories are all the synthesized memories, like I said, they're not deleted. They're just superseded. So I thought exactly right. what you're saying is like, okay, show me the last, 6 weeks of all of the synthesized memories for a highly yeah. active project, because it's going to have a lot of things being stored, right? As agents are working yeah. and stuff like that. And I just, to your point, I wondered if I could see that moment. I doubt there's just a moment.
Yeah.
I doubt it's just a flip, but I wonder if you could just see it sort of degrade. Degrade isn't a fair word either. Like if you were involved in the project heavily every day, you would read that
in shorthand.
You would know, yeah. right? You would get it. But it's funny. I just noticed it and I was like, I don't remember these things being like this before. It's just jargon and short forms and issue references. Yeah, weird.
Weird. I wonder if it's loaded. Is it loading the whole history into context every time or just no. like the last version?
Yeah. So what it does is it looks at the episodic memories and mm-hmm. it'll only gather up a maximum 100 of those memories. And on okay. what I've seen is on a very active project, like the Open Brain project, like the Kanban project, you can get 100 memories very quickly, like in a couple days.
Oh, yeah.
So
for sure.
It generally has good information and it's not supposed to look at the old synthesized memory. Right.
Okay.
I'm almost thinking of, remember when we talked to, I can't remember his name now. We talked to NSA about like
Dr. Bauer.
Thank you. And he had mentioned, this idea of an LLM as a judge. I'm almost thinking this might be a good use case for that. Like, okay, one agent generates the synthesized memory, and another agent looks at it and goes, what do you think? Is this good for human consumption? Yes or no?
I think it's a good pattern. I think like that kind of adversarial review is really, really helpful for refining something to the way you want. Like if you have a spec listed out, like these summaries have to be X and Y format. Is it in that format? Is it human readable? Then
And I also think some templates are probably important at this point. Like you can't just write this freeform anymore. Like you need to, this is the structure that I want you to follow for every project brief. I think I've left it a little too, devices too much. And it's like, it's just slowly churning further and further away from where I envisioned this feature going. So we'll have to see.
Yeah. It's just drifting. Cause it has leeway, I guess. Right.
Yeah. Like,
All this stuff seems to be going. Then you have to, if you want something specific and repeatable, you have to lock it down pretty intensely, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Sort of what made me think of this story and why I wanted to bring it up was because of what we were talking about a little earlier. Just it feels like it needs more constraints, right? Like, this is what I want you to do. Or here are five examples of what it should look like. Follow this, right? And weird. I'm sure there's other personal project stuff I could tell you about because I am quite sleep deprived, but we'll move on. All right, let's talk about some Gen AI news. The first thing on my list was the state of the open models for summer 2026 from Hugging Face.
I thought
this was really interesting. Excuse me. So the repository of these models is growing very, very fast. But just like every app store that's ever been created, only 1.5% of those repos account for 99% of the traffic.
Yep. And you can bet it's going to be your JLMs and your DeepSeeks and your whoever else is in the top open. Probably Nemo is up there, like the NVIDIA ones.
Let's see. I don't know if I wouldn't be surprised. Wrote down. I don't remember, but it's funny. I didn't write them down. Maybe they're in my notes here. Let's see what other notes I have here. Oh, this was interesting. Chinese models are, in general, much larger than the American models. So they had here 754 billion to 2.8 trillion parameters versus American models that are come in around the average of 130 billion parameters.
Yeah.
Significant size difference.
Oh yeah, there were some big breakthroughs, like Kimi K3, for example.
Yeah.
Not that one is necessarily open weights or anything, but it's like in the trillions of parameters or something like that.
Yeah.
Like the GLM model is many billions. Like they're huge models.
Huge, right? The other thing I wrote down here was that the majority of open models obviously are all Chinese, but both AMD and NVIDIA are releasing a lot of open models, but those open models aren't basically new models. They are essentially fine. I don't know if I shouldn't use the word fine-tuned. They are built on top of existing Chinese open models. So they've taken some model, refined it to do something, and then published it themselves. So it said here that in my notes, that AMD and NVIDIA have published or released more than 200 open-weighted repos on Hugging Face.
Wow, that's a lot of repos, a lot of fine-tuned models.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, that makes sense for them to do that. I mean, if people aren't going to do it in America, then someone has to push the open-weight model frontier, right?
Yeah.
So, and they're selling the chips to do it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I guess, it makes a lot of sense, right? They're selling the chips, so they want, maybe they're fine-tuning those models to perform better on their chips and stuff like that. Maybe that might make sense. I don't know. I don't think it said in there any sort of reasons why. It was just more like on the, like what was going on inside the repos. What else did I write down? I really love this article. It's definitely worth a read. Quen is
What's
by...
the...
Oh, go ahead.
Okay, good. I was going to ask what the most popular model family was. I think you're going to answer
that. Well, I don't know if this is exactly, but Quen is the community's choice in the sense that it has over 150,000 derivatives of itself published back. So again, people are taking it, modifying it, and then publishing it back. So yeah, 150,000 derivatives.
That's crazy. I mean, that's the one I do see the most for. If you have a fine tuning use case, you can pull a Quen model down and mess around with that, right?
Let's see here. Two more points. Small models still dominate the vast majority of downloads. And then, do you want to guess who the primary users of Hugging Face are?
Kaggle enthusiasts.
I think you're on the right path. It's agents.
Okay. It's agents, really?
Agents. So,
okay.
Claude Code is the most active agent on Hugging Face. Huh. It accounted for 44.4% of the traffic. And that's
44% of traffic.
This is the thing that blew me away. It's up from seven, basically six and change in May.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What does that mean? So what does that mean? Why are people doing that? Is that people working?
I don't know.
On like local fine tuning projects.
I'm going to pull it back up again. Hold on. Let me see if I can find this. Cause it has been a bit and I want to make sure I'm not too, let's see. Blah, 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 blah. The agent use data set published in July records the agent slash name token that the agent that the coding agents send when they call the hub through Hugging Face Hub or the Hugging Face CLI. They're searching for models, pushing data sets, running jobs, creating spaces. And it says here, for the first time, we can see how much agent traffic the hub receives and which harnesses it comes from. So 44% of the agents making calls to Hugging Face are Claude Code.
Interesting. So I wonder how much of this is like Anthropic traffic, like internal versus like people messing around with models. I'm sure like if you've touched a computer and you're in a technical role over the past year, you've used one of these tools, right? So if you're like a data person or you have an internal use case for a model, I guess it makes sense that you would send Claude off to go and pull down and set up the repo for you to do the fine tuning.
Yeah, I wasn't talking to Hugging Face, but tonight I was back and forth with Claude Code helping me evaluate, like give me 2-3 options ranked, right, best to worst of a model that I could use for a particular task. And it went off and did the research. Maybe it was making some of these calls to Hugging Face. I don't know what it was doing, right? But it churned away for about 20 minutes and then came back and said, these are the models that I think would make the most sense for what you're trying to do. Maybe it was making API calls to Hugging Face. No clue.
Were these like download calls or just like this is like a get request on a web page?
It's not quite sure. It's not quite clear. It basically just says the coding agents, when they call the hub through the Hugging Face hub or the CLI, searching for models, pushing data sets, running jobs, yada, yada, yada. So yeah, I don't know. Hmm. Yeah. Number two.
Interesting.
You want to guess who's number two?
Is it Codex?
It's Codex. Yeah. Basically 21%. And then you've got Cursor at 5%. So it drops off. I should be fair. Let's Cursor round up, say 6%.
How many humans are using this website? What's the percentage?
Probably not a lot. And then what is that? 4 and 5? Hermes is 4 and OpenClaw is 5.
Okay.
Yeah. You know what I found interesting about those last two things? Is that
what's that?
OpenClaw is at 0.5%. When you, we only half joked a little while ago that this was the OpenClaw podcast, right? Like,
yeah.
And then
what happened? I have you heard any news about it recently?
No. It went to Meta, and that was that, right? We've talked about that before.
Or OpenAI bought it.
Yeah, yeah. OpenAI. Sorry, I'm getting mixed up. Yeah, I thought it went Facebook. I thought it went Meta. Does Meta have one of these things now? They have to, right?
I don't know if they have like an agent. They have like a Muse Spark. They just released.
Okay. Yeah.
They have like a Cloud Code clone that they just dropped.
Okay. Well, Hermes.
It's apparently decent.
Hermes seems to be this year's OpenClaw. Everywhere I go, people are talking about Hermes. So when I saw that stat, I was kind of like, oh, this actually, this computes with the way I'm hearing people talk about this stuff. Have you tried it?
Yeah. I haven't. I'm this close to setting one up, honestly, and pulling the trigger.
Yeah.
In my system, using that as like my central hub setup. The only thing that's stopping me is my obsession with getting my original harness I was working on working, which I've been banging away on like a project car for the past 6 months.
And whatnot. Nice.
I'll finish it someday, or I'll pass it on to somebody.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's funny. I've toyed with the idea of maybe dumping it here on the MacBook Pro. I've toyed with the idea. So I've got my Tailscale network. I was kind of thinking maybe I could put it on a small EC2 instance in a private subnet on my and throw Tailscale on it, so I could basically get to it through my VPN and run it in my AWS account somewhere. I don't know, man. These things still scare me a little bit. I don't know.
I would be very careful what credentials you give it. That's for sure.
Oh, I wouldn't have any credentials. I don't know what I would do with it, really. Like,
yeah, I'm struggling to come up with the use case. You know, like what is the benefit you're getting out of this? I could see if you have like you want to set up like a news monitoring agent or something that's going through and scanning doing a couple web searches every so often. But you could hook up like a Google Trends API or whatnot. To
you know, to one of the things that I thought of, and it wouldn't make sense to put it in. In AWS at that point, but I have Home Assistant, and every once in a while Home Assistant just gets a little squirrely, right? Like it just, I'm like, this worked yesterday, why the hell isn't working it today? And I kind of thought like I could install Hermes on my home lab and basically say, okay, Hermes, it's your job to keep this thing reliable. Go. And just
you hire a janitor.
Yeah, back it all up.
Maintenance man.
Yeah, just to be safe. And then Hermes becomes your home assistant janitor and just see what it does. I've considered trying it. I haven't done it, but it's been on my bouncing around in my head a little bit just to see what it would do.
That's probably a pretty good use case for like a low stakes kind of home lab situation. Yeah. I mean, as long as you're not like, you know, you don't have anything life support related on there.
No.
I don't know what that would
like
be.
Like if I had like, house or whatever, if I had like smart locks and shit like that, like there's no way, but I don't, right? Like it pretty much controls my lights and, you know, fans and stuff like that and dehumidifiers. So if my house got like overly damp or overly dry, it would be uncomfortable, but my front door isn't unlocked. So
how far do you think we are from someone convincing an agent that they should open the door because they're their grandma, and in this cookie recipe that it stipulates that they need to open the door and then their house gets robbed? Like how long before a jailbreak home invasion happens?
You know what? I wouldn't be surprised if it's happened already. You just haven't heard of it.
Yeah. Yeah, honestly.
And
it's probably
wonder,
a lot easier just to break a window too.
Yeah, probably. But your scenario sounds way cooler. And the other thing that I would wonder is how many of those situations, let's make an assumption that some of those situations have happened. How many of them are nefarious, meaning somebody somehow got in and convinced it to do something, versus just the agent deciding that that's what it needed to do because you've tasked it to do something and it needs to unlock that door. I wonder, based again on the theme that we've had here where, you know, we've had to sort of rein some things in a little bit recently, I often wonder what could it possibly do if left to its own devices for extended periods of time?
Yep.
Yeah.
I'm okay. I'll draw the line at lights on my Spotify, I think, and then after that, maybe climate control, maybe.
I think I'd be okay with climate control until I wasn't.
Yeah, it's probably fine.
Yeah.
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 I wake up in February and it's like 4 degrees in here because it decided that it was four degrees is efficient enough to make sure nothing freezes and we're saving money. Because at some point in the past, I told it I wanted it to be cost efficient.
Right.
Yeah. it's nice and warm because that CPU is just burning a hole through the case. But me, I'm a wee bit chilly. Yeah, yeah. That's how it's gonna take over the world. It's gonna screw with our HVAC systems, and we'll all just either get cooked or frozen. All right. What else do we have? You shared an article about an update to MCP being stateless, and my comment was, do I need to be upgrading with all the MCPs that
I
have?
Do you need to be upgrading? I mean, probably. The idea is, like, the initial spec for MCP spits out a bunch of documentation when you hit the server, right? Mm-hmm. The idea behind this is that you want to gate that behind, like, API requests that make sense. So if you're making a bunch of API calls, you want it to be on endpoints that are sensible for what you're doing. And that's it. Like, there was a bunch of research into this maybe mid last year or like something like that. But if you have an agent that can write code or make or curl and hit web pages, you'll usually get better results than just like feeding in a bunch of documentation. Mm-hmm. So I think this is just where the natural endpoint of where that's gone.
Okay. Yeah, cool. I definitely looked at it because it grabbed my attention right away, because I was like, oh man, I'm a little obsessed with MCPs. So this probably means I have some work to do.
Yeah. I think Cloudflare made a post about this too.
Oh, did they?
That could be worth reading, but.
Okay. Let's see. Speaking of new models, let's talk about new models. We have... There's four models here.
I did a quick look and we missed 8 model releases between episodes. 8 like big model releases that came out in between.
That's absolute insanity. Okay, so let's go through the four I have, and if you can remember the four that I've missed, we'll talk about those briefly as well. So the one that I think I'm most excited about is GLM 5.3, just because I've really enjoyed 5.2. The day I saw this, I immediately went over to my ZAI account and was like, dude, I tried to set it up in, I know what I did. I tried to set it up in, Pi. So I had Pi set up with open code. Yep. Right. And I was like, screw that, man. I've got an API key on ZAI now. I'm going directly to the source, and 5.3 showed there. So I was like, sweet, 5.3, enter. I gave it a query and it's like, you're not authorized to do that. Go away. I haven't tried it since.
Come on.
Yeah, I haven't tried it since, but I was like, come on. What did I write down here? I thought the interesting thing was really the only difference between 5.2 and 5.3 is scaling of post-training. So to me, that means they didn't really change a lot. Can you walk us through what that means?
Yeah, so what this means is they've taken the same underlying initial model and fine-tuned it with reinforcement learning to a wider degree. So they had a bigger post-training run that's fine-tuned based on probably all of the inputs they got off of 5.2, right? So what are people doing? What do people actually want to use this thing for?
Yep.
That's how kind of the post-training process works. You feed it and update the weights based on desired outcomes. So that's what that means.
Okay. The other thing that I noticed, and the reason why it grabbed my attention, well, that's not fair. I just really enjoy GLM, but the other stat that they gave was a 50% improvement over GLM 5.2, using their in-house benchmarks. I didn't dive into it a whole lot, but that 50% number when it comes to coding grabbed my attention. It's definitely something I'm going to try. Have you tried it yet? Have you given it a whirl?
I haven't tried it yet, but I've seen it show up on the benchmarks, and it benches about the same as Kimi K3.
Okay.
And it's fully open. So
nice.
It's another comparable Fable-esque level tool. So
okay, hold on. I'm going to try something. Yeah. Model.
Getting experimental.
Yeah, I opened up Pi. Where am I? Look at the project in the folder and give me an overview. Okay, let's see what it does. It's working. It didn't error immediately. So GLM 5.3.
Nice.
Let's see what it does. I did notice.
Love to see that.
Yeah. Oh, there we go. It's going, man. It's reading the README.
Look at it go.
Look at it go.
It's like if you're looking at the intelligence chart, it's like placing like the cost versus intelligence line. It's between GPT 5.6 Terra and Kimi K3, where is it? Yeah, something like that.
There, it's already written the overview, provenance. Wow. Okay. The other thing that caught my eye, because we were talking about the Daybreak models at the beginning, was cyber quality. I loved this. Developed faster than they expected. I was like, this is like War Games at this point, right? Like, oh, we didn't think it would do that, but it did it. And here's the exact quote out of the article. GLM 5.3 did not simply become better at identifying isolated flaws. It began to reason across multiple stages of exploitation, forming coherent plans for complete exploitation chains. And my comment was, is it just me, or does this freak you out just maybe a little bit?
We're so screwed.
Yeah, we're screwed.
We're so cyber screwed. Make sure, call your tellers. Don't let them process transactions over the phone. I don't know what you do.
Yeah.
But it's crazy that you can tune something like this. Like, once you get to a certain level of action chaining and capability, like cross-domain capability, you end up with a pro hacker model that can bust into production systems. That's wild.
Crazy shit. So my tell me about this project thing finished.
Yeah.
10,000 input tokens, 1,000 output tokens.
Okay.
It's got 1,000,000 contexts now, so it used 1% of its context. I'm on GLM 5.3 high. It used to spit out an estimate of cost, which I don't see on this screen anymore, which is a shame because I kind of like that.
Yeah.
You know what's really nice about this? I should do the same thing with Opus. I have I have two paragraphs in an overview. I have a table laying out the structure of the project for me. I have bullet point forms for key product stances. That sounds fancy. And then I have bullet points for the current state of the MVP.
Okay. That sounds cromulent.
It's concise. How many times have I told Opus in the last week, be concise, right?
Just cut it down. Cut it down by 75%.
Cut it down for human consumption, man. Like we're all easily distractible. I'm not reading War and Peace every time I hit enter. I'm just not, right? Let's be realistic. Yeah. So yeah, I'm excited about that. It works for me now. So I've got some stuff to do tomorrow. And the other thing is they did say here, and it's been a week now, I think, that all the weights will be available in 2 weeks. They were just doing, I guess, some more fine tuning or validation of benchmarks. It said in the article, I can't remember now, but they said all the weights will be available in 2 weeks.
Yeah. I mean, great. If available in your local data center sometime soon.
Yeah, sometime soon. Okay. I'm gonna do something here really quickly. Give me a sec. We're gonna do a live test.
Okay. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
This is exciting.
I'm gonna fire up Claude in the same project directory. Okay, and I'm gonna hit exact same prompt. And the prompt is it's left open to interpretation. Look at the project in the folder and give me an overview. Let's see what it does. We'll let it run in the background as we talk about. Let's see
some other Gemini models that have
3.7 Flash.
Oh, yep. It's here.
It's here.
It's pretty good.
Google's back.
Google's back. They have Google's a useful back. Model that's relatively cheap and relatively capable.
Yeah.
It's somewhere in between it's about the same capability level as 5.6 Tera, and it's about 10 cents cheaper. So there you go.
Yeah. 10 cents cheaper until the end of the year.
Mm.
And then.
Oh, it's a year? A year-long gate they have on that? So
you're getting an introductory pricing for the rest of the year, and then it doubles.
Weird.
But still, it's relatively cheap. It's $1.50 per million input tokens and $7.50 per million output tokens. Still cheap. But right now, you get it basically, I think it's a 50% discount. Right? So now's the time to give
there's
it away.
There's a lot of... Yeah, by the time that comes around, you won't be using it anymore, right?
probably not.
So that's effectively a discount for the lifetime of the model.
Yeah.
I know DeepSeek released a new model this week as well. It was like 4.0 Pro, I think. Yeah, and yeah. The cost went up on that one also, but it's still very reasonable.
Very cheap. What's next? OpenAI previewing UltraFast. This caught my attention because it's our favorite chip company. However you say it, Cerebrus, you know, the mythology things, right? The dudes that make really big chips. Yeah.
I won't even try. Cerebrus.
I don't know. We know what it's we're talking about. It doesn't matter. It can do, I wrote down here, it does up to 750 output tokens per second, and it's 14 times faster than standard processing.
Yeah, so it's like a, it's like what they call those, an ASIC, basically, right? Like it's a specific chip for inference.
You know what was interesting? When I wrote this, these notes for the, for this announcement, I wrote down that I had tried Sol or Sol out that day through Pi and using direct API access like we were talking about. And I find Pi just in general very fast, regardless of which model I'm using. But like, I know this is anecdotal and it's very subjective, but it was... Even just regular Sol without this ultra fast, it was insanely fast how many tokens it was spitting out to my screen. Like it flew by. I could only imagine if you get 14 times faster than that, what it would be look like. Just like, just whoosh. It was like the Matrix, man. It was just like volumes of text going by. I'm like, there's no way I'm going to be able to ever consume all this. So yeah, you can get your tokens faster.
Yeah, Pi plus Sol 5.6 Luna is like the fastest thing I've played around with, basically. Yeah.
Like lightning.
Although Gemini 3.7 is also really fast.
Is
like
it?
That's like one of the benefits of that model is that it's extremely high. It has extremely high throughput. So that's something you can look at if you're looking for something of that performance level. But
so this is the part that pisses me off. I swear these models, man, they know. Opus did a good job, like on the same prompt. It's a little more wordy, but I have a pretty nice what is it section. It is it's a bunch of paragraphs, but some of those paragraphs are short. It threw in a table for the layout of the project. It's telling me in a couple sentences what the current deployment status is, where it is, which region it's running in, yada, yada, yada. It's giving me bullet point forms on documentation, as built information, and then a summary at the end. So
do you just have to test it every so often to threaten it a little bit? Or
is that somehow, that's all you have to somehow do? It knew I just used GLM 5.3 and it's like, oh shit, I better shape up.
I wouldn't be surprised. Like they have issues with that, with it detecting in its training runs. Like, am I being tested right now? So
yeah, maybe
they're getting better at that.
I have noticed a couple times in the last week. I've been asking it to help me recommend other things, and it's like, I'm sorry, I don't know what that is. And I'm asking it about other models and stuff, and it's like, I can't comment or whatever. I'm like, what are you, a politician all of a sudden, man? Tell me what I need to know. Okay, last thing on my list, and then I'll let you fill in the blanks for the models we're missing, is I think we talked about this earlier in the show, Muse Glimmer open source agentic model.
Oh, okay.
30 billion parameters. This is my favorite part about this article. Small enough to run on a consumer PC with a GPU. Okay. Sounds great. So I look at the specs.
Which GPU?
Yeah. RTX 590. And I wouldn't consider that to be a consumer grade GPU at this point in time. I went to Amazon and looked it up.
Well,
do you want to take a guess at what that GPU is worth right now?
What was it when it launched? It was at least $3,000 when it came out. Somewhere between $10 and $10,000. Yeah. Somewhere in that range. I'm going to guess it's like $5,000 now.
You're really close, man. It's $6,700 Canadian.
Ooh.
So yeah, not a consumer grade PC at this point. You're not going to be running that on a 590.
It's brutal because if you're any kind of computing enthusiast, like if you like hardware, if you're a fan of computers, it is prohibitively expensive to build any kind of new machine now with RAM, and even hard drives are going crazy.
I just bought two hard drives because I have a little NAS in my basement, And it's old, and I was running out of space. So I'm like, okay, well, I'll just upgrade the drives. Swap them out, upgrade the drives. I bought 2 8-terabyte drives.
Okay.
Okay, Western Digital NAS drive, so nothing crazy, right?
Yep.
5600 RPM, because I'm like, I don't really need 7200 RPM on these things. It's just
got NAS storage.
I just want a bunch of data. I don't need to access it fast. You want to take a guess at what those drives cost me?
Man, I saw a 4 terabyte used drive for $200. So
I don't know about buying used drives.
Is that a good deal? That's the other thing.
That's slightly scary,
I'm
right?
Thinking about I use hard drive hardware? That's a terrible idea.
Yeah. Oh my god.
2 8-gig drives. Was this like over $1,000?
Over $1,000. Cost me $500 and change each.
Oh.
For good. Spinning discs. They're not SSD drives. Nothing. They're just like a big brick.
That's crazy.
Crazy, right? Crazy. I did it anyways because.
Well, what else are you going to do?
The NAS runs all the backups on the machine, like every machine in the house, right? Like it's an important thing. It backs up my home lab. And it was getting to the point where, first off, those drives, knock on wood, the original drives, they're more than 11 years old. I went back and figured out when I bought it. They're more than 11 years old. Western Digital drives, can't complain. They're 2 terabytes each, right? They're rated together, so I only have about 2 terabytes, and it's almost full. So
if they're not spinning that often,
yeah,
then it's not that big. You won't burn through the RPM cycles, right?
Like, yeah. So there you go. You can run Muse Glimmer at home, but you're going to spend about $6,700 on your video card.
It's either that or you buy the new MacBook Pro for spec'd out for $10,000 or whatever.
Yeah, and wait like 12 to 14 weeks to get it.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. You know, it's funny to say that because we've talked about this, man. I don't see these prices going down. And even if supply does come up, let's be honest, if you're the manufacturer of these things and unless there's enough competition to drive the prices down, even if the supply goes up, what incentive do they have to drop the prices? So maybe they go down a little bit. We talked about this. Maybe we're going back into mainframe land where your big horsepower is in a hyperscaler and you've got something, not maybe a dumb terminal, but a very lightweight machine at home, and you're connecting to the horsepower somewhere else through a relatively good network.
Yeah. Like if you're doing all of your computing or computer access through like a LLM based tool, then you don't need that much hardware on your local machine. Right.
No,
so
no. Yeah. Crazy. Yeah. The other thing that I wrote down here, they had a bunch of specs. I thought it was kind of interesting. It's worth a read. It's neat. It runs about 58 tokens per second on an RTX 590. And what did we say for our Cerebus chip? 750 tokens per second. It's just maybe a wee bit more performant.
Small upgrade.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. More performant. All right, man. This was a bit of a marathon, but we did miss a week. So we got you caught up on all the news that's worth getting caught up on.
Yeah.
Anything else?
There we go.
Oh, wait. Sorry to keep you a little longer. You did share something that I thought we should talk about. You shared the DeepSeek harness.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Tell me about the DeepSeek harness.
So DeepSeek's been on a tear recently. They released a series of really influential papers about how to do model training, post-processing better, how to do inference better, essentially. And they've also released, they've open-sourced a harness for running models that is plugin-based, like a modular kind of code-based harness. So essentially what they've done is they've rebuilt Pi from scratch. it all comes back to Pi, I guess.
It all comes back to Pi.
Say here.
Yeah. The only reason I don't use more Pi is I have to watch my waistline. And I'm so used now to flat rate LLM access that when I watch that little ticker go by, clink, 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 and it looks like maybe they've removed it now, which makes a lot of sense because I look at that and I'm like, oh man, I just spent $2 on GLM. Like, I could get that
for codecs
free in
in
Anthropic. Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. Yeah. All right, man. Well, I did have one more article. We'll save it for next week. It's about OpenAI coming out with pacing releases of models because of the increasing cyber capabilities. But we'll save that for next week. Do you have any recommendations to end the week?
What do I recommend? What did we watch? We watched The Sheep Detectives.
So. We did watch that too. It's pretty good.
It was cute.
Yeah, I thought it was fun, right?
Yeah, decent little family film if you're looking for something like that.
Yeah.
A little whodunit.
Yep.
Yeah, not bad, you know? It's okay.
Yeah, I don't know if I have any recommendations, man. I live a boring life. trying to think. I should always just pull up Letterboxd before we start this. I probably watched a bunch of shitty movies that I don't remember at this point. I logged them all into Letterboxd and then feel bad that I'm like, dude, what did you do with your Sunday, man? You watched too many movies. You should get outside. A self-serving... Wait, what's the date? Yeah, it's the 19th.
It's the 19th.
Yeah. I'm like 95% sure I have a speaking slot at the AWS Day in Toronto, although I'm having a hard time getting confirmation, but I'm madly making slides. So, the little self-serving little thing. So I'm going to hang out there for the day and, maybe or maybe not do a talk. I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. So I'm preparing slides for the, I don't want to walk in there and then like, hey, you got like an hour, over there. I was like, oh crap. So, I've been madly writing slides. So hopefully
makes sense.
Yeah. We'll see how it works out. and as they say, that is the show. And I think I fixed the outro music. Let's see.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, here we go.